everyone. It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. Vicki and I could have chatted all day. You can hear in this episode the infectious love that she has for others. It was such a blessing to spend time with her. I'm so glad that I had the recording running when Vicki got on the call, as she starts right away sharing her story. Here we go.
Hello, Paula.
Hi, Vicki.
Well, I'm glad you called because, well, I was going through a bad time in my life once, and when I did, I decided, well, I worked at a psychiatric hospital at the time, and I thought, you know, these people are getting occupational therapy, and it really seems to be effective, which was stupid. I mean, it was ridiculous because what these people were doing was they were taking, the occupational therapist drank a lot of beer, so she'd bring her beer bottles into the psychiatric hospital. The patients would tear off strips of masking tape, put it on the beer bottles, and then cover it with shoe polish to make it look like it was a leather covering. But the irony of the whole thing, the ridiculousness of the whole thing was that it was effective. So a couple times in my life when I've had hard times, one time my younger brother and I decided we would take up ceramics as therapy. Another time I taught myself to make bread because I thought, you know, you need something that draws your attention. Okay, well, and here's the thing. So I was at the Putnam Congregational Church, had one of their giveaway days, and I was there, and I was struggling. I had quite a few issues with my daughter and situations, and, and there was a stack of 5-inch squares of material cut out, and I thought, gosh, I think I'll take those. I think that's something that I could do very easily because I used to make clothes all the time, and I could make a quilt out of that. Well, actually, I did. I made that. My first quilt was from the material I got from Putnam Congregational.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it came out so great that my daughter dearly loved it. So she got the first quilt that I made.
Oh, but, neat.
Yeah, and so from then on, it has been a learning process, just like most things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had such strange things happen in the process, in that I worked at hospice, and at hospice, my policy was if people would offer me even a drink of water, usually I would say no. I just don't accept gifts. You know, like if someone wanted to give me something, I would say no. You know, it's my policy not to accept gifts. But one day, there was this one patient who I never felt, most of the people, when I met them, we would just click and connect, you know. And there was this lady that we just didn't click somehow. And it really rubbed me and bothered me, you know. And one day I went to her house and she said, would you do me a favor? And I said, well, I got to preface that. Wait a minute. I had just started at hospice, actually, and I had gotten so close to this one patient and loved her so much, and she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving up Route 7, and I was crying my heart out to God. And I said to God, Lord, I think you gave me this job as a gift because I had prayed the last day. I had worked in administration for 25 years doing office work. I had put my head on my desk 3 times in one day and prayed to God that he would give me something with meaning and purpose. I took a 3-month leave of absence, and I got on my knees before God. And another company called and asked me if I would come and be their business office manager. And I said, oh, I just have to take care of people. I just have this overwhelming desire. And they said, oh, you can. And I said, well, there's no way you can pay me what I was making. And they go, oh, no, we'll pay you more, you know. So I stand up in church and I tell everybody, oh, I think this is of God because, you know, all the money and everything, you know. I was there for 1 week and I was so sad. I just knew in my spirit that this was not right. And I was on my way back to that job when I got a phone call from hospice. And I said, I'll be right there. I went to that place. I thanked them graciously for everything, you know, their kindness and generosity and everything. But I knew this was my calling. So I went to work for hospice, and I fell in love with this woman. And when she passed, I was devastated. It was like my grandmother had died or my aunt or somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm going down Route 7 praying to God, saying, oh, Lord, if this every time one of these patients pass, it's like this for me. I don't think I'm equipped emotionally to do this job, this gift that you've given me. So I'm driving down Route 7 crying my heart out, and I said, you know what? I had this revelation. I thought, you know, people do AIDS quilts. I should do a hospice quilt. And I said, yeah, Vicki, yeah, you go right ahead. You do a hospice quilt. It's going to take you 10 years to do it. You're never going to do it. And, you know, I started degrading myself, you know, and trying to come back to reality.
Yeah.
And I go to this woman's house, the one I was telling you about, that we just didn't click. And she said, could you do me a favor? And I said, well, I'll try. What could I do for you? And she said, I made this quilt, I think she said like 1978 or sometime. And she said, I'm just going to give it to the Goodwill. She said, but I hate to give it to the Goodwill. I would rather give it to somebody that I know and that would use it. She said, could you use this quilt that I made? And I said, it's my policy not to accept gifts. But I said, you know what? On my way over here, I could cry right now telling you this policy.
Yeah, yeah.
I said to God, I need to do a hospice quilt. I need to memorialize the people that have touched my life. And so I took that woman's quilt, and I, when you know, of course, I would take care of like 250 people in a year or more, much more. But every once in a while, there would be one that would be so special. And I would go home, and I would embroider their name on that quilt. And I kept it on my bed. And when I would kneel beside my bed at night to pray, it would remind me to pray for those people, those families that were missing that person that had passed, and thanking God for the opportunity to minister to those people and to love them, because there was just this openness when I did hospice of just some people, you would just meet them. And many times they would say to me, why are you so kind to me, or whatever? And I'd say, you know, it's the Jesus in me that knows the Jesus in you, and we already love each other. And I would tell them that quite often. Well, one day I took care of, I don't know if I should mention names, Raleigh Frederick, and he was the local minister for like 40 years, I think, for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I took care of Raleigh, and we had such a beautiful, loving relationship, and I'm still friends with his wife today.
Yeah.
So I had embroidered his name on that quilt, and then I had Margaret come over for lunch. I said, Margaret, I want to show you something. And I took her into my bedroom and showed her that quilt on my bed with Raleigh's name on it. And I've done that not just one time. I've done that other times.
Yeah.
Where I've had the family come to my home, and then I would say, I have something I want to share with you. And then I would show them this quilt that has the names on them of the people who had passed away that had touched my life.
Yeah.
And I think it was very, it meant a lot to them too, you know, that the person was still going to live on and, you know, and everybody's memories, and also kind of memorialize them for me.
Yeah, so, and I'm so thankful that you were there when my dad was in hospice. You were there for us too.
Yeah, and your mother's such a gentle spirit. I've always admired that about people, and that's a quality I don't possess. If there is any gentleness, I have this necklace that says, if there's any goodness in me at all, it's because of Jesus Christ. And so, and that's really the truth. If there's any gentleness,
it's true for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But your mother exhibits that naturally. That's a part of who she is. That's who she is. And that's the transformation I want God to do in my life. But back to the quilt, you know, Paula, since then, I knew a gentleman, we're not close by any stretch. He had open heart surgery. He lives alone. He doesn't have a lot of family. And I made a quilt for him. And I made him, it was beautiful. Most of my quilts have crosses on them. And it had a big cross and on it. And I took it to him. And he couldn't understand. He kept saying, why would you give me this quilt? And I'm telling you, it's not cheap.
And no.
Some of them cost as much as...
Quilters know it's not cheap.
Yeah. I mean, I have like $350 in some
way. Yeah.
But somehow I feel like God, just like the people I care for, somehow God just leads me to them. He also leads me to people that I just feel like I need to make them a quilt. And there was this young boy, after I'd had my car accident, I had to go for therapy. And they told me, I went to the Betsy Mills for pool therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I met this lifeguard there, and he is such an exceptional young man. His name's Jace Ward. And for some reason, I saw this man, I think he was like in his 90s, early 90s. He had gone to the pool for therapy, and he got in the pool before the therapist got there, and he passed out. And Chase saved his life.
Wow.
Chase saved him twice, I believe, because that wasn't the first time it had happened, I found out, when I was there that day and I saw him do it. Also, Jace goes around to, like, schools and does these paintings on the walls with sayings against bullying about, mm-hmm. you know, being kind and that sort of thing. So this one, I was at this woman's quilt shop, and I saw this panel, and it was about there is, the question is to be or not to be. There is no question. And then all these little squares were be generous, be kind, be loving, be thoughtful, be, you know. And so I just felt like God wanted me to make that quilt for that boy. I didn't know where he lived. I didn't know his family or anything, you know. But I made him this quilt and took it to him to his graduation party. And
oh,
it meant so much to him, you know, because he's going to take it to college with him.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know what it is. It's just a beautiful thing that God, it's therapeutic for me, you know, that I go in there and sew like a crazy woman when I'm having stressful times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's therapeutic for me, but then it's such, so fulfilling to give that to someone who obviously is not expecting it from a stranger, basically. Or, you know, we're not total strangers, but it's not like somebody that's my best friend or I'm close to, or it's not a family member.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes the Lord will lay someone on my heart, and I just feel like it's like a ministry almost. It's
yeah.
Very. Anytime you can take a gift that God gives you and refine it because of his touch on your life, and then listen to him enough to follow his leadings, many people can be blessed from the one gift that he's given you. And it might be something as silly as knowing how to sew two pieces of material together. You know?
Yeah. He uses, and sometimes he uses our weaknesses just to.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, when I started doing these quilts, the first one I did, when I look back at it now, I think about how, well, my sister and I have a saying. We say we only give quilts to people we love because our imperfect quilts show that we ourselves are imperfect. And it's only by the grace of God that we're perfected, you know,
mm-hmm.
so that there's a completion. This is brought to a completion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my motto. And there's a saying in quilting where it's not imperfect if unless you can see it when you're, I think there's some things about when you're riding past it on a horse.
yeah.
You see the flaw or something, then it's a flaw. Otherwise, it's not a flaw. But
no.
I have a sister-in-law who, she is like Martha Stewart personified. I went and spent a week with her in Arizona, and she just perfected my skills in like as far minute as detail as cutting, you know, how to cut properly, how to measure properly, seam allowances, just so many things, because mine was just something, like most of the things that I do, I've taught myself.
Yeah.
And so they've just evolved. But she is a perfectionist and very, oh my gosh, you couldn't believe. While I was there, she did this quilt where you take 20 layers of fabric in a certain pattern and you stack them and then you cut them in a certain pattern and they come out like with all these spikes and crescent moons and things. Oh, you know what I'm saying? It's like not a nine patch quilt. This is absolutely amazing. When, you know, she's showing me now, this is the way you hold the ruler. But in the process, I've already made about 30 quilts. So anyway, It's just a really, it's something, it's a gift that God has given me that I'm able to share with other people, and I'm so thankful for it.
Yeah, that's neat. Now, besides that, have you taken any other classes for quilting or just what your sister-in-law shared with you?
No, I haven't taken any other quilting classes. I really want to take a basic sewing course again because I want to start making clothes again. I made clothes for my daughter. I made clothes for myself. I made pants with zippers in them and buttonholes and the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But then you know how it is. That was like, let me see, I'm 67. That was 50-some years ago. And
yeah.
So I bought a pattern to make this top, and I thought, I can't even read the pattern anymore. I mean, basically, I know. But I would really like to just go back and have someone go over the basics with me again, you know? So, and patterns have changed, I guess. They've evolved over the years.
Yeah, I don't know because I haven't sewn clothes for a long time.
Yeah, did you used to make clothes?
Yeah, I did. I made a coat for my son when he was in college.
Wow.
I took a priest outfit costume pattern, and I changed it to make it look like a kind of an old style military full length coat.
Wow.
And I made him pants that were, the legs went really wide and then I cinched them up with at the bottom, and a vest to go with that. And I lined it with red in that coat with red. Anyway, I think that was one of the outfits he was wearing to class when he met his future wife.
Oh, my gosh.
He would just wear it to class. Anyways, it was just funny.
Well, I made the outfit that I did. I did a thing at church on Mary Magdalene. It was a monologue. And I made the outfit to look like what I thought Mary Magdalene might have looked like, although the one I have looks more saintly than maybe she would have worn. I don't know. No, but some of my friends said, oh, let me see that. And they turned up the hem and everything, and it was like, oh, come on, Vicki. It was a little crude. But it served the purpose. So do you quilt, Paula?
I do. I took a class when we were living down in Charlotte.
Oh.
So, yes, and I've just counted up. I've made about 40 quilts now.
Wow, that's a lot. I think I probably made about 30, but... And, you know, and here's the hard part is when I made Daryl's granddaughter's two quilts, and they were one was made out of frozen material and one was Hello Kitty. And, you know, material, some of it's like $17 a yard.
Yeah, yeah.
The license stuff. And so mm-hmm. I made them, and I really, like I said, I probably had about $300 in the quilts. And one of his daughters said, so what do you think you had in that, about $40? I thought, oh, my gosh. And so there was no value. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
they had no respect or value of not just the work, but the expense and how the you know, you could do a whole sermon on it because what my heart was in it to do it, to do the projects and everything and how proud I was and so happy and everything, and then to have someone just think of it as it was nothing, you know, is couldn't you think about the Lord. Just today, my devotions were so good. It says, can I share it with you?
Mm-hmm, please.
It says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought it. And so many times there are things that are so precious and so valuable to one person's perspective. And I'm guilty of it also. It's, you know, the devotion is about how we need to have appreciation, respect for the kingdom of heaven. And sometimes that and so many other things in our life, we just end up taking for granted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really moved me, this verse, because I thought, do I really cherish that as a rare pearl, something of expense and value like that? But when we're talking about quilts, it reminds me of that experience where I had put my heart and money that, you know, was really not very I'm not a wealthy person, and I had put so much into that, and then to have it just looked as if it was nothing. You know, spiritually, we can fall guilty of that in other areas of our lives, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And before I started the quilt, I don't think I realized the value that was there, and just the time value.
Oh, yes, definitely. There have been times when I've had, like, I felt like I had a deadline. I had to get it done by someone's birthday, or they'd had a baby or something, you know. And you're just like, oh, down to the last minute, thinking, oh, my gosh, I've got to get this thing, bound or whatever, you know, do the binding. And you do one row, and you think, oh, my gosh, there's three more. But it's a good distraction, too, you know. And it's a thing, it's creating a thing of beauty out of scraps, you know. There's so many aspects to it that are just so precious when you think about it.
Yeah. I just bought some little containers that I want to start sorting my smaller scraps by color so that someday I can put those together.
My sister-in-law has done ones that have, like, I can't even begin to tell you how many pieces she told me, but it just boggled my mind. Because she does exactly what you said. She has a sewing room. She's got two Bernini sewing machines side by side, which I couldn't even afford one. But she has a closet with coat hangers and all these quilt tops hanging over them, draped over them. Mm-hmm. And then she has just rows and rows of different, you know, like maybe batiks. That are in a certain pattern. But then she has, like you said, she has like big pickle jars full of scraps that'll be red, or then one with blue. And she uses those teeny weeny minute pieces and makes quilts out of them. It's unbelievable. My sister, the last quilt she made, I think she said she used like 9-inch squares or something. It was to match the bedroom of a little boy that comes and spends the night at their house sometimes. And she said she just wanted something that matched the curtains on the bed. So instead of going out and buying one, she just put these big pieces of material together in all these different patterns, you know. So there's utilitarian uses for quilts, and there are pieces of artwork. Have you ever been to Athens, to the barn?
No, I have not. Mm-mm.
Oh, Paula.
I've never heard of it.
Well, in Athens, they have a place called the Dairy Barn. It's very easy to find. And at the Dairy Barn, they have international quilt festivals. Blenner Hassett also has quilt shows once a year. Hmm. And they're pretty interesting. But at the one we went to, the international one, they were supposed to be art exhibits. And some of them might have like big holes burned in it. Really bizarre, so bizarre that I don't even know that it's in another realm of quilting. Nothing like something you put on your bed and say, oh, look at the pretty quilt. But you need to, and they also sell the books from each year, and they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
And so those are two resources. The Blenner Hassett Quilt Show is really phenomenal. It's really cool. And, you know, a lot of men are into quilting now.
Yeah, yeah. I've lost his card. I hope to find it someday. But when I was first thinking about doing this podcast, I was at Podcast Movement Conference, and I found this guy about it, and he said, I know someone, and I was expecting him to say his wife, and he actually had made his wife a quilt when they got married.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just feel awful that I can't find his card and I don't know who he was.
Oh, gee, that's a lost treasure. You'll find it eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, I hope so.
Mm-hmm. Or unless your house is like mine. But eventually I usually find things. I have to tell you another little thing I do, and I have done for several people. When I worked at hospice, if someone would die, they would bring me their clothes. And I would make quilts, lab quilts for them.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a woman whose, they thought that her niece had been murdered. they weren't sure. The circumstances of the death was pretty strange. And she had twin daughters. She had, I think there were five people all together. She had a twin, no, she had, she was a twin. She had a twin sister, and then she had children. And so they brought me her clothes, even her swimsuits. And she was a tiny girl. So it wasn't like we had big pieces like me of denim. And I made lap quilts for every one of her children and her twin sister. And then a neighbor of mine, her grandmother passed away. So she brought me her grandmother's work dresses that she wore every day. Mm-hmm. And I did like a rag quilt out of them because they were, some of them were kind of threadbare. So mm-hmm. I took flannel and then, have you made rag quilts?
No, I haven't.
My sister makes them a lot. I would take the layer of fabric that she had and then another layer and then some flannel. And then you just sew across from corner to corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put the raw edges together and stitch that. And so it gives kind of, I know you've seen them, it gives
yeah.
a lacy effect. And
mm-hmm.
so because the material was so old and so thin that I did that to reinforce it
mm-hmm.
and then gave it to her granddaughter. So she always had that lap quilt to remember her grandmother by.
Nice.
So that's another nice use, you know, you could make of quilting for people that, in memory of someone who's passed.
Mm-hmm.
So just another thought, and that's another thing I've shared with people a few times.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, my dear, is there anything else you'd like to
discuss? I'm looking through my list of questions.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like you've answered most of them. I have one here. It's kind of for fun. What do you think your worst quilting experience was?
My worst quilting experience. Well, for me, it was what I shared with you, how I had spent all this time and money and energy and love and so excited to give this gift at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have the one girl go, what do you think you got in those? About $40? And then I know since I've seen the girls, it's like the one girl appreciated the quilt, but you know, she said, oh, I outgrew that, you know, and the other one didn't care for it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that was one of the hardest experiences I had. And also, I was friends with this woman who, my sister and I and my friend went to Lancaster, Pennsylvania for a long vacation, long weekend, you know, and all we did was go to quilt shops. And after the whole vacation, my friend said to me, you know, just because you're into quilts doesn't mean everybody is. I thought, oh my, we had been raised with the tradition, well, two important aspects of life. We were raised with the tradition that, you know, all the older people in the family, they tried to have enough quilts that everybody they valued in the family would get one of their quilts when they passed.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just a legacy thing. And then in Africa, I heard this story once about in Africa, some people are so poor that if they even had like a shawl or something they could pass on, that other person who probably had nothing valued that blanket or that
mm-hmm.
shawl or whatever you gave them as a covering
mm-hmm.
So much. So every time we do those shoebox things, I try to put little blankets inside of there, you know, because even if it's a baby doll blanket or, you know,
yeah.
or a crocheted blanket or whatever, I just, for me personally, I think, well, you know, they're a comfort. They're to comfort you. Now,
mm-hmm.
what I have in my home is I have, like, that I've made my favorite things quilt that has all these, the fabric that's my favorite fabric that has, like, bird cages and birds and bicycles and scriptures. And then I have one that is a quilt that I made that's called The Lord is My Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
I read the book by Philip Keller and did a few sermons on it about the 23rd Psalm.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, those few verses, how you could write a whole book about it. And so the middle of it is a panel with sheep, and then the rest of it is like batik stripped quilting. Do you ever do jelly rolls?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's the easy.
But I know what they are.
Yeah, they do jelly roll races, I
mm-hmm.
guess, where you can finish the top of a quilt in 3 hours using a
yeah.
jelly roll, I guess.
Yeah.
So I have used that myself on some, because it's the material I love, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that for my own bed, and then that's one way that, instead of painting a picture, because I used to paint, and I make baskets, and I don't know, I've just always been that kind of person, crocheting and embroidering and always doing something, you know, or trying to learn a new craft or something as a form of expression.
Yeah.
So now that I'm into quilting, then that's what my hobby is. But it's not just hobby. It's a therapy for me.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess that's probably my worst experience. I can't think of any.
Yeah. I actually got to interview Sherry at Willow Creek Quilts yesterday.
Nice. I thought is her quilt shop open again?
Yes.
Good.
Yes,
I saw on the internet,
yeah,
on Facebook that it was closed to the.
Yeah.
The
so place. And then I had seen when I looked on Facebook that you were part of that group, so I knew you had a connection there.
Well, I'll tell you what the connection was. I have those quilts that I told you I made and gave, the graduation quilt, the guy who had open heart surgery. I went there to her shop. You can pay her $10 an hour and quilt a quilt on her machine. Now, you know, it could take you weeks to quilt a quilt, but I went there and did it in like 4 hours. So not only is it inexpensive, she is such a kind, patient, good person to work with somebody who's a novice like myself. I'm not the quality of my sister-in-law in Arizona. I always call myself just a hack. I'm just, like, you know, evolving this enjoyment, this hobby, into hopefully improving my skills constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, you know, I've used her, and she's just a wonderful person to be helpful and be patient with you and everything.
Yeah, she seemed very, very nice.
Mm-hmm, she is. And
she had a good visit with her.
You can just go there and just sew and visit. People just go up there and sew and visit.
That was neat.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a tip that you would like to give others that are coming along or starting?
Well, the best thing I've learned recently, there's a lot of importance in the techniques that you use initially for the basis of your quilt, which is, like I said, the measuring and the proper cutting of your material. And those are things that, unless you realize over time the importance of them, especially if you're doing piecing, if you're doing piece quilts.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought a book that my sister-in-law had. I loved it so much. I think it's called The Farmer's Wife Book, and it has all these different panels. Well, if you're going to put together, it's one thing to put together a 9-patch quilt. It's another thing to put together a scrap quilt or a jelly roll quilt. But if you're truly going to be faithful to putting together pattern quilt squares, then you do need to pay attention to details like the size, the measurements and those sorts of things, not just for aesthetics, but for the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I never really honed in on because, like I said, my sister and I said we give imperfect quilts to imperfect people because we're imperfect ourselves. But all of us, every human being, if you really are into something and have an appreciation for it, you owe it to yourself to refine it and constantly try to grow and improve yourself.
Yeah.
And that's part of any skill that you want to take on or any hobby that you want to take on, because everything we do has to be a thing of, you know, pride, something, a quality product. That's just that's just my opinion on it. Because, you know what, the bottom line in life, this is the bottom line I try to live by. I don't succeed, obviously, often, but we're on this world for two purposes. One is to learn how to love each other. By loving each other, we learn to love God, and the other is to glorify God. And the way we glorify God is by always improving ourselves in the eye of other people and in God's eye in our own hearts toward ourselves.
That's great.
Well, it's just, I tell people that all the time. And, you know, I'm a poor example, but I am an example of someone who's even at 67, when you think, well, you can just sit back and glide. No, you can't, because there's constantly. I just put that, I don't know if you see my Facebook post, about people with faults. I hear so many people, you know, when you go to the Betsy to swim, you get people often get political and get personal, and you learn a lot about people just with their mm-hmm. conversations. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are really intolerant of others' weaknesses. I really think God challenges us to really, I just watched this movie on Netflix. It was called A Question of Faith. And even though it was kind of different, because I'd never experienced some of the worship styles that were exhibited in that movie, still it challenged a lot of people's faith in that you, in our perspective, some things can seem just and can seem right. But when you put that up against the sacrifice that God made, then all of a sudden our own opinions and what we think is right and just is not necessarily what is right and just in God's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
We just cannot continue to live with the world's perspective on what is right and wrong. So,
right.
Anyway, that's one of the things that I've experienced recently, and it's touched my heart because for personal reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Paula, you're a good woman, and I've always respected you. You're very thoughtful and kind, and I've never heard anyone ever have an unkind thing to say about you.
Wow.
You're a tribute to your Lord.
I pray that He uses me. And you mentioned Psalm 23, and I actually get to teach the kids Sunday morning, and it's on Psalm 23. So that was kind of neat. It came up in my devotions this morning, and mm-hmm. Kind of out of the blue, it's like, wow, you know, studying it this week for the kids, and here it is, and here it is the third time. So
that happens to me often. It's like giving it validity, but you know how I came to and was interested in that? Kelly Lincoln had brought one of her little lambs to the church for the kids to see one Sunday.
Uh-huh.
The little lamb was laying on her lap, and I said, oh, that's precious. And I just thought that's the way they are. And she goes, oh, no, lambs are not like that. Lambs, unless they feel very secure, and she was explaining it all to me about the importance of that lamb being able to be on her lap, you know. And then when I read that book by Philip Keller on the 23rd Psalm, that's what he said. He said, the reason that says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leadeth me, you know. Anyway, so
mm-hmm.
can't even quote it for you right now off the top of my head. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. The reason it says that is because a sheep cannot lie down. If he has any fears, if he's cold, if he's hungry, if he's wet, if there's anything at all going on inside of that sheep, he cannot lie down and rest. And so that's why that psalm is so important, that he gives us rest, he gives us peace. And without those qualities, a sheep can literally die. A sheep can literally die of fear. A sheep can literally die because it's not smart enough to get in out of a wet driving rain, for example. He was a sheep farmer in Africa, and so he understands, you know, the valley of the shadow of death. He understands the relevance of that. He understands, I never understood, and he will prepare a table for us in the midst of our enemies. Well, they take the sheep to this tableland seasonally, and a good shepherd has already scoured that whole area to make sure there's no place that predators can hide, there's no poisonous plants that a sheep might eat because they're not smart enough to be discerning. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? So
yeah.
much of the 23rd Psalm has such a deep, deep meaning that we only skim over because we don't understand the importance.
Yeah.
We don't understand shepherds, you know, first of all.
Right, right.
It's amazing. And that, I told myself, when I read that 23rd Psalm, those few verses, six or seven verses, whatever it is, And I read those few verses and then read a whole book on it and realized the depth of it. I thought, how much more true is that about the rest of the scripture?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's so much depth to it that we just, well, I read my Bible over and over and over, but like even today, I read like a chapter. And then what did I get out of that chapter? There was probably so much more in that chapter than I got out of it today.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
So, anyway, I could talk to you forever, Paul.
I want to say thank you so much for visiting with me, Vicki. I'm so thankful to have you on and sharing your story with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity because, you know, so much of that I forgot all about. And then I was thinking, oh, what would I possibly tell her? And then I thought, oh, I remember my hospice quilt. And then I thought, I remember the memory quilt. Oh, no, the memory quilts just came to me just now. But
mm-hmm.
there were so many different aspects to it, you know, that over the years, because it's been quite a while I've been doing this now. When I was in the fourth grade, our fourth grade teacher had each of the kids in the class, I don't remember it was each of the kids, I know I made one, do a quilt square of a log cabin. And I've never forgotten that. I always thought that was such a cool project. And somehow in the fourth grade I did one. So I thought, I can't imagine what that, I never saw the end product.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I always thought that was really kind of a neat idea. Another thing I did was I went to a ladies' baby shower, and mm-hmm. then I passed out squares, quilt squares, and then I passed out permanent markers, and everybody wrote a blessing to the baby. And then I put the blessings together in a quilt and gave to the mother from her friends that attended the baby shower.
That's nice. I bet she appreciated that.
Yeah, there's so many things you can do, you know.
Yeah, there really are.
Yeah, it's endless.
Like I said, we could probably talk all day.
We probably could, but I have things
so
I have to do, and I'm sure
I
you
know.
Do. Well, God bless you, Paula. Thank you for calling me, okay?
Yeah, thank you for being
like
interviewed.
Yeah, so. Paula, I love you. God bless
love you.
You,
too. Bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Quilter's Life. You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Thanks for listening.